You are listening to the Mindful Marketing Show podcast, episode 33.
Welcome to the Mindful Marketing Show with Kimberly Maska. You are about to be empowered as we teach you the best marketing strategies used by today's spiritual entrepreneurs. Get ready to share your message and inspire people worldwide.
Hello, I am Kimberly Maska, your Mindful Marketer, and I would like to welcome you to the relaunch of the Mindful Marketing Show, the podcast for spiritual entrepreneurs who are ready to change the world with their gift and have a business that reflects their authentic self. To celebrate the relaunch, I have a free gift for you. It is the Jumpstart Your Spiritual Business Guide. In it, you will find all of the tools you need to, well, jumpstart your spiritual business and create an abundance of time, money, and freedom. Don't wait to share your gift with the world. Get your copy of Jumpstart Your Spiritual Business today at mindfulmarketingshow.com. Now, before we jump in, this episode is brought to you by Kickstart Cart, my shopping cart of choice for myself and my clients. It has everything you need to create the business of your dreams with passive income, or as I like to call it, making money while you meditate. Picking the right shopping cart for your business is a big deal, and it can be very confusing. So what I have done is created a free workshop for you to help you through the decision-making process. You can find this free shopping cart workshop at mindfulmarketingshow.com/kickstart. That is mindfulmarketingshow.com/kickstart. Now let's listen to this episode. Enjoy. Hello and welcome. I am Kimberly Maska, your host of Mindful Marketing, the podcast where today's mind, body, spirit thought leaders discuss the latest strategies to build your business and take the icky out of marketing. Joining us today is Beth Rapps. Beth is founder and lead coach consultant of Raising Clarity. Her mission is to cultivate abundance in noble causes, people, and organizations, along with a safe space for practical wisdom in our world-changing environment. Beth has 30 years of relationship fundraising and organizing, along with 5 years of money coaching experience. She is devoted to interpersonal wisdom practices and has a life blessed by all of it.
So welcome, Beth. Thank you so much for joining me on Mindful Marketing. How are you today?
Kimberly, I'm wonderful. Thank you so much.
Oh, fantastic. So I would love to hear about your personal story behind creating Raising Clarity, and what was your journey and how did you end up going down that path?
Okay. It's been a real interesting, like a braid, an interweaving of several strands. I started out as a young woman, got my BA, and then I didn't have enough money to go back to school. I'm a pretty intellectual person, but I didn't have the money to do that. And I'm a real social justice person. So I started out as a grassroots organizer in my early 20s. First, I went to France, and that's a whole other story, which will probably come in later. But I came back home and took a job as a grassroots organizer and immediately had to start raising money. That was just part of the deal. There was no great pot of money that was going to get dumped on me unless I dumped it on myself. And within a couple of years, I realized that there wasn't money for one of the prongs of the organizing that had to do with feminism. And so I started a women's foundation. I thought, well, now I know how to raise money, so I'll just raise money for what I want. And what was missing in Florida was a women's foundation. And at that time, I did what everybody else did later when I started the Florida Women's Foundation, which was write to all the other women's foundations and say, will you fund us? I tried that first. And they're almost all local or statewide. There's a couple that are global now, and there was one, and there still is one that's national, the Ms. Foundation. But what there was a national network of women's funds. And early on, as a young organizer, I won some technical assistance from the network. Was really lucky to have a lot of support, and so that got off the ground. And then, so that was interesting to notice that I could do that. One of the first people who taught me to raise money was one of our donors to the initial organizing work. I went to meet with her, and she met with me, and she was a long-standing donor, and I knew she was going to say yes. And as I was leaving, I had explained what I wanted to use the money for. She said, "You didn't ask me for money." And I said, "Oh, you're right. I didn't ask you for money." And so I had to sit down and ask her for money, which is one of the single most excruciating things that turns out people can do. And it's one of the things that I love now teaching people to do. I'm 54 now, and I was probably 26 at that point when I finally came back from France. And still, though, I didn't ever have a lot of money in my personal life. I can raise whatever's needed. I'm not at all shy. But I thought, what is this that I don't have a lot, but I have this idea of abundance, but it's like a stream that excludes me. And I turned to a book called Money Magic, and I can explain how I found that book, but I turned to the woman who wrote that book, and she became a mentor, and she became someone I got certified with in money coaching, which deals with the whole interpersonal and intrapersonal piece of why people can have huge amounts of money, pass them by, come through their fingers and leave, can also hoard money and not know how to use it and when to use it. Deborah works with 8 archetypes that are derived from Jung. It's just extremely beautiful work. So that got kind of grafted in there. That got braided in there. And then my spiritual life really kept sort of prompting me or pushing me to do my work in a certain kind of way. And I can talk more about that. But those are the 3 strands, I would say.
That's really beautiful. And I want to hear more about France as well. I have this affinity with France. Anyone who knows me knows that. So what was the turning point then that you decided to take this, as you're learning this information and bringing it in and seeing how other people can use it, what was the turning point that you actually turned it into a business for yourself?
Right. Well, you know, it's funny. It's more like it's always been a business. And it's not so much that I turned my passion into a business as that I turned my business into a passion. I grew up with a lot of, I would say, not very healthy money attitudes in my family of origin. And there was this idea that you don't do what you love for money. My parents were inadvertently, I mean, my father grew up really poor and my mother grew up middle class. Both of their parents were immigrants, so I'm second generation in this country. How do I say? This idea that, well, you should just do what you're good at. So you're good at languages, you should be an interpreter. Well, I am an interpreter, and I'm fluent in French, and I translate books, and I have a whole career as a translator. But that's not what I do with Raising Clarity, except that I do translate in different languages for people. I translate money, I translate spirituality all the time, because I work with people across all kinds of spiritualities and people who have no spirituality at all. So, yeah, I just wrote a blog post on that. That was really fun to write. So it's more like I gave myself permission to weave my passion and my business together. I stopped just doing what I was really good at that nobody else wanted to do, which is teach people how to ask for money in a really empowered way, as long as they're serving other people. I don't work with people who aren't serving other people. I just don't. That's just not part of my deal. So it was more like I gave myself permission to bring my passions into that, into money. Money coaching was the beginning of a turning point, thinking, oh, there's a bigger story here than just being a good fundraiser. And then the spiritual piece for me, which I often refer to as a contemplative piece, because that's something everyone can at least sense into, can feel. I thought, there's something here that I'm allowed somehow. Like, my guides, my, you know, spiritual guides, my teachers feel like it's okay to be, like, super calm in the middle of money, which is usually kind of a rat race, and in the middle of mission, which is critically important, mission, in the middle of being extremely self-organized and self-initiating, which I am also. I have also got that gift. It's just something I came in with. So it's more like that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, that's beautiful. And I love that it's, you know, it's, you said your work turned your work into your passion, and sometimes we forget that, or we get lost in everything. But to really grasp that and love that is such a beautiful thing. So I love that we're talking about money, because I find in my mind-body-spirit community with my clients and the people that I speak with that money is such a, but it's something that holds people back. And so I want to maybe touch a little bit upon maybe a couple of your concepts of how people can release that, because I think it ties into, for me, it ties into marketing, because I find a lot of clients will hold back on marketing because they don't really want to sell and they don't want to put their service out there for money, and they do it for free, but then they can't pay their rent. So I want to talk a little bit about your ideas around how we can change that thought process a little bit so that we can then be comfortable with marketing who we are.
That's great. Well, let me tell you my first cut on it and then see what you think.
Okay.
For me, there's an inner and an outer process to that. And there's almost always an inner and an outer process. Some people come to me and they have one down, but they don't have the other one. Some people kind of have neither. And so I'm going to assume that the answer is for someone maybe who has neither, or that what we want to talk about is both, the inner and the outer. So for me, I had to really do the hard work of looking at myself and seeing, where am I turning away money? And this has given me incredible sensitivity now. I'm pretty psychic, and that's another piece of the contemplative thing that, you know, by quieting down, I've really also come to accept that. So in terms of the 8 archetypes of money coaching, I can kind of sense now where people have a money block, and I felt like I always could, but now it's real vivid. So everybody who has a money block or a money hoarding issue, which I also want to stress is pretty key, can do that inner work. And then there's the outer work of, it's just hard as hell sometimes, and you just have to practice. Like, this is a little bit of a reveal. I used to be an art model, and art models take their clothes off in front of people. They don't have sex with anybody. They just get drawn. And that's what I do. I still do it. And I have done it since I was a young woman, because I was on financial aid when I was at college, and it was the best job on campus. And I remember the first time I dropped my underwear in front of a bunch of frat boys. That was who was in the art class, because they needed an elective. And the teacher was wonderful. He was a friend, you know, and there were lots of people I knew in the class, but it was pretty terrifying. That's what it feels like. Asking for money feels like that. Dropping your underwear in front of a bunch of frat boys. The thing is that the frat boys were about 40 times as uncomfortable as I was. And that's also true. That when we ask, and I have limited experience teaching people to ask for investments, but I sense that it is the same. So I have not personally, because I've always worked in the nonprofit sector until recently, not asked for an investment. But I have a feeling it's the same, that the person needs to take a leap and make a commitment. And I really get that, because in the nonprofit sector, you're always asking people to commit to something that, compared with the for-profit sector, is completely intangible. You know, helping orphans or saving whales or stopping pesticide use or whatever. I mean, you're asking someone to take a big leap and often give you a boatload of money. And it may be more money than you've ever thought about having in your life. That often happens. We are perfectly capable of asking for much more money than we actually have, which flies in the face of some wisdom about fundraising. So the cool thing about it is that the other person is about 40 times as uncomfortable as you are. So there's inner work and there's outer work. The art modeling.
I love the art modeling analogy. That's great, because it is uncomfortable. But I think as we build our confidence in ourselves, that uncomfortableness starts to leave us a little bit. So who is your ideal client, and what are you doing from a business and marketing perspective to go after that client to build your business?
Well, I hope this is okay, but I pray for that. I pray to be guided to the right people. I intuit my New Year's plan every year. I change my approach. We're coming up on my new year, which is the fall equinox, because I believe it's nature's new year, and it's the right time. Not that there's ever only one right time, but it's the right time to start new projects. Last year, what I was guided to do was offer public speaking for free. And I'm a pretty quiet person, but I'm a great public speaker, so I went out and got 4 gigs. Not a ton, but 4 gigs, very different gigs, and I blogged about that, and I can share that with you. And one of them was one I had done a number of times. But I always try to, when I do speaking, I try to speak at my edge. I try to do training at my edge, especially if it's for free. If it's training for a particular soul colleague, I will design it exactly the way they want it. And a lot of times it's the same basic, like, fundraising stuff or money coaching stuff. I try to teach at my edge because I find that I'm more appealing if I'm more humble and I'm more open. So that's a place where I do find my ideal clients. And so I position myself in places where people are doing work for others. And I make it clear that I have both the sort of inner development, willingness to do the hard work with them inside, and that I firmly believe in being very disciplined and organized, including with time. And I teach what I call time sculpting. I don't just teach time management. And I'm a fundraiser. So I'm not at all shy about helping people get over asking for money and very carefully structuring who to ask for how much when in an annual calendar, for example. Does that?
I like time sculpting. That's really... we may have to talk more about that for sure. So you're finding these clients and you're kind of directing them into what you do. Is there a certain way that you, I hate to say the word convert them, but how do you find that, we talked about how you found the people, then how do you then make them a client? Do you have a
That's great. Well, because conversion has a religious overtone that I kind of enjoy playing with. And conversion is an interesting concept. Like, I don't want them to just believe in me. I'm not that. I mean, I do need them. If they don't have trust in themselves, they have to have trust in me, in a way like a therapist, the way you project onto your therapist until you are strong enough in yourself. And a good therapist gives you that confidence in yourself back. That's what I aspire to do. I never want people to be dependent. But I do want them to believe that it's possible, for example, not to compromise any principles, that there's no scarcity. There's no scarcity of money, and there's no scarcity of ways to ask for money. Like, you and I both have this thing about taking the ick. You have the thing about taking the ick out of marketing, and I have this group, this Facebook group, Promotion with Integrity, and we talk about that there's always another way. You don't have to promote your work in a way that makes you want to throw up. You just don't. So I think some slowly, some quickly, gradually get converted to this idea that these things are possible and that I can teach them those things. And they become soul colleagues. They join what I call like my corner of the beloved community. They go in and out of being clients. And I found that it works much better for me if I hold that framework than if I think of them as clients or not clients. It doesn't work. They often come in as friends. I tend to love everybody. It's like, maybe sounds dorky, but it's true, especially, I love the people that I know well, and I kind of just love the people that I just meet, too. Like, when I start talking to them, I just fall in love with their hearts. And so I'm not interested in them just being my client forever. That works against the independence that I want to foster in them. But I am interested in staying in touch and referring them to each other, and again, just kind of weaving community with them.
That's beautiful. I love soul colleagues. I think I might have to borrow that, but that's really beautiful. Because it's
Please
true, and you
do.
End up spending, you spend so much time with them, you do become friends with them. And it is more than just, oh, you're just my client. It's like, no, there's a real connection, but that's beautiful. Beautiful. So on the marketing side for, like, we're going to go social media. Are you using social media to market your services and what you do, or how do you use it?
I was told that I really needed to get my butt out there by a wonderful woman named April Silver. April Silver is in New York, and she is a sort of spiritual impresario, but also a PR, a super-duper great PR consultant in New York, and she was offering introductory hours. And I blogged about her stuff, so I took her up on that. And she's such a woman of integrity that I thought, I know she's right. I've got to really deal with more than just republishing my blog on LinkedIn and Facebook. There's something that I've got to do. And so I sat in meditation and just, again, allowed in a sort of very Zen way, which is a contemplative practice that really doesn't need God, doesn't have God in it, and works for a lot of people, and just watched the sort of nausea arise, you know, the way you do in Zen meditation, just watch emotions arise, watch thoughts arise. And then I think I was more open to the guidance, the intuitive guidance, to create a group on Facebook myself. And that was the group that I just mentioned. And that has really been a terrific place for me to sort of dabble, paddle around in, get really wet and help other people, bring other people in who also feel like ick. It's about 80 people. It's not teeny, but it's definitely not huge. It's open. And that brings me onto Facebook a little bit more. I'm very resistant because it's a real mind sink and a time sink and an attention sink. So I feel like I want to be really careful with it. And then the way I met Dana was through a LinkedIn group that I found out about after April worked with me and said, you really need to. I said, okay, let me find out where some of my soul colleagues are hanging out on Facebook. Let me find out where they're hanging out on LinkedIn that they really are getting value out of. Because I had tried sort of shooting myself, and it just didn't work. And so I found a couple of neat LinkedIn groups as well.
Oh, that's fantastic. I always tell everybody, find what resonates, because it can be so overwhelming. And you see all this marketing, and this person says do it this way, and that person says do it that way. And it's just find what works. But the Facebook group idea is really nice. And I think you're probably the first person I've spoken with that has really talked about having a group to get them interacting with the stuff on Facebook. That's a great way to do it.
Oh.
Beautiful way.
I'm surprised.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It's lovely. It's a great way to extend my brand. I'm doing all the stuff that I should have done and it's coming very naturally. I'm like, oh, that's why people say you should do that. Oh, that's where that piece fits. And it's very natural. It's very interesting.
Yeah. Are you actually allocating, like, advertising dollars towards what you're doing on social media at all?
Well, I wondered how to answer that. Again, I don't advertise. I no longer advertise at all, period. I do invest money, and this gets back to how I meet people. I meet them face-to-face the best. Well, how on earth? I live in a town of 800 people. How do I meet people? I mean, I'm great on the phone. I love being on the phone. I used to do radio. I have a good voice. I teach on the phone, thank heaven, you know, for the internet and for telephone. How do I meet people? I invest money in people might think this is foolish, in a sort of loss leader of going to conferences where my way is not paid. I am not paid as a speaker to give these talks and trainings and things that I blogged about, the 4 gigs that I got this year. And that was part of the guidance is do not worry that I got. The intuitive guidance was do not worry about getting paid. So I invest money in those ways, which I constitutes my advertising budget, and they're fun times for me. I make sure that I'm in a decent hotel. I mean, it doesn't have to be the super fanciest. I do love luxury, and I've written about that. I will definitely take myself to a luxury hotel that's gorgeous for an overnight, and I get an incredible amount of creative work done there, so that counts. But I don't advertise. And one of the, I guess, the book that really confirmed for me not to advertise any longer is called The 7 Levels of Communication. I don't know if you know that book. It was written for real estate professionals. And this guy has, Michael Mayer, he has totally revolutionized stuff. And it was all stuff that I knew from grassroots fundraising about how do you do relationship building. It's very much about relationship building. And he doesn't advertise. He says, don't advertise anymore. I thought, yeah, I think it's time to stop advertising. So I don't. But I'd be very interested in what works for other people.
You know, and that's fantastic, and I like to point out that the investing in the conferences is key, and I think people forget about that. They'll network locally, but to really take the time to and make sure that you've created a budget for it so that it doesn't hurt you when you go, oh, I can't go, but put that as part of your reinvestment in your company and make sure that you do that. But it's key. I know personally I'm going to a conference this weekend, and I love it. You get to reconnect with people, and the relationships you build are invaluable.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
People have a first person take on you, and they can refer you through that. They can say, oh, I met somebody and she's amazing, and it just carries so much weight.
So for your live event, are you capturing any leads while you're speaking live?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. I expect that. I sort of have like convert brazened on my forehead when I'm speaking. I mean, I just become like this live wire, and I'm just reaching out to people and saying, you know, like a radio frequency. Yeah. I want to beam out to the people who are on my frequency. That's all I want. I don't want like everybody, but I want to be around more and more people who are on that frequency. So yeah, that's that and friends and referrals. It's usually one degree of separation away. I have people join the Facebook group that I don't know. I have people get on the website and find the blog that I don't know. I mean, that's the point of broadcasting to LinkedIn and Facebook. But yeah, it's pretty much when they see me or hear me somehow.
That's in the connection. You really can't replace that with anything. So how are you distinguishing yourself from other people in your field? Do you have, who I call them complementers instead of competitors, do you have people that are doing the same thing, and do you work with them as affiliates? How does that work for you?
Right. That was one of the earliest decisions in terms of my branding. There are tons of great fundraisers, and a lot of those people are the right person for somebody else to work with. Like, if you know, I sort of need people to be willing to do the inner work as well as the outer work, because I honestly can't figure out how people can have more money if they won't change inside, unless they have done the changing inside and there's just a skill set they don't have, which I have. So there's tons of like secular fundraisers, and I know where to find them. The social justice fundraising, there's just a network of people. That's who I went to speak to this summer. But the edge for me was coming out as a contemplative and saying, there's actually a really strong relationship here. If you won't do the inner work, I can't work with you. I can't tell you how to get more money because I don't know. Because the way I've learned to do it is this way, to have this incredible abundance, is to align myself with it and remove out of that alignment anything that's not in that alignment. That's been huge. And just this year, I came out, and it's a pretty lefty group, and they tend to be quite secular. I did a session called Fundraising as Self-Development. And it was a huge leap for me. I mean, I had done something kind of around the edges of that the last time that conference was held. But this time, I really sort of, I did a guided meditation with people. There's no proselytizing because there's no particular path to the divine or even the inner self that I'm interested in pushing on people. But I hold a space and I do work in the dream time or guided meditation work, you could call it. And I did several. I had 2 hours with these folks and the room was pretty much packed. They came and went, but that was also part of the conference, is that people could come and go. And that was really challenging, holding space when people are coming and going. Usually I'm used to an audience that's sitting right there with me, usually on the phone, which is great because there's no visual. I'm so used to no visual that I have people close their eyes when we're face-to-face. And it was wonderful.
Great.
It was funny. People participated beautifully. I didn't need to worry that they had a preconception that this is all hocus-pocus or this is all silly. Those people who self-selected into that room were the right folks, and they were very receptive.
Very nice.
That's how I distinguish myself, I think, from other folks.
Now, do you have I have to apologize. Do you have a book?
I don't. No.
You don't?
I think someday I will. And it may be based on the blog posts, but right now my blog is the place that I write. I'm also a philosopher, so I give papers, and there's going to be some more writing coming out of that on the Beloved Community, actually. But I don't have a book.
Okay. I thought maybe I'd missed it, and I was like,
No. Yeah, you would know if I had a book. I published books as a translator, but that's different.
So what has been your biggest challenge with marketing?
I think it's really understanding my own niche. I had a branding study done, and that was a huge investment. Speaking of advertising, he used social science methods. He talked to my clients, and at that time I referred to them as clients. And he said, you know, you're a fine fundraiser, like people get that, but what they get from you is clarity. That kept coming up over and over and over, and it was a window to talking about what I think of as a spiritual or contemplative piece in a very direct way and yet a soft way, not a pushy way. And it's true. It gets out the way that I'm very disciplined and organized, and I help people get more disciplined and organized and remove the obstacles to that. Yeah, that was probably the turning point for that. And that's why we called it, I used to call it bringing money to light, but I don't think that was clear enough. It wasn't clear enough to people that I wanted to SEO my website, for example. And I said, you know, I don't know how to talk about what I do well enough. And now I feel like I'm just getting that niche even more clearly and putting some more flesh on those bones.
Very nice. And clarity, again, raising clarity, and I love it, but yet if we're not clear on who we're talking to and what our message is, it gets all jumbled up. So that is such a key part of marketing your business, so you're attracting the right people.
It's also important that we're clear inside ourselves. Like, I find people can be extremely bold and ask for anything they need, especially because they're serving other people. They can ask for anything. We can learn to ask for anything if we're clear and strong about why we're asking inside ourselves. And then I guess my experience is as soon as I ask, I get it. Sorry, that's the way it is for me. Yeah, anyway.
A great gift. So as an entrepreneur, do you have any kind of software or anything that you use that is incredibly helpful to your business and what you do?
Yeah, my word processing software and my blog software and my email software. I know that's probably not the answer. I love my date book, but it's not software. It's paper and pen. And my
I love being able to write, too. But in a date book, I love that.
That's it. I even blogged about my date book. I'm like, I don't care how you use it, but do something. You can use Google Calendars if you want. The killer is when you have a calendar, you have like a bunch of different calendars, like Google Calendars. That to me was not a good thing, unless you have one integrated calendar, which is this way I do things.
Yeah, I try to automate everything from Evernote to Basecamp and Google thing, and they all do integrate with a little work.
Well, fine, but I worked with somebody, I said, show me your calendar, and he showed me 5 different calendars. I said, how do you ever know if you've gotten everything done? Like, I know when I'm done, I'm a recovering workaholic, so I have to stop working. Totally serious. I'm real serious about it. I have to stop working, or I would never have any time with my child. I would never have time to meditate. Yeah. So there was a moment where I'm like, you can't even see all your calendars at the same time. Just, you need to integrate them. It's great that they all integrate. That's what I would need to see if I were going to work with somebody, is one place where you can get the feeling of crossing something off, and then at some point you are actually done for the day. There may be way more time than you even wanted. It can be scary to know what to do with the time. But let's right. look at that. Let's reveal that. Let's pull the covering away from that and see, what are we doing with time?
That is such a key point, because we get sucked in, and I think when we had you had been talking with my assistant, she mentioned that you take time off, like you go free of technology, and that is so important in what we're doing, because especially as an entrepreneur building a business, we get so caught up in all of it, and to be able to breathe and take that moment is so key.
Because we're our business. Like, there's no juice otherwise. Or we become like an empty well. The National Black Women's Health Project was founded by a woman named Billie Avery, and I think she coined that expression, that we're like the empty well, that black women get to be the empty well because they're constantly giving. Well, I'm not a black woman, but I get what she's saying. I really appreciate that metaphor. Like, as entrepreneurs, we are the well. We're giving, we're juicing everybody else so that they want to work with us. Well, where does it come from? Yeah.
Absolutely. So where do you see yourself going from here and continuing to build out your business and your platform?
Well, like I said, this is coming up on my new year. I'm getting the details on a plan. I'm going to be doing some work on racism, actually, against racism and building the beloved community, and I have no idea how that's going to make me any money. But I do have faith that it's all going to build together. So it's the first time that I've taken on an organizing project in years. I sort of moved away from organizing at one point because it sort of broke my heart. I couldn't figure out what was the most important thing. And at that time, when I was a young woman, it was also all seemed to me that we were against everything. And I thought, no, I need to figure out what I'm for. And many years later, I'm for the beloved community, which is an expression Dr. King didn't coin, but he used a lot. And it just felt like I have enough space and time and money in my life to devote myself to a project. I'm not sure it's going to be a nonprofit. I'm very interested in what happens in this country around racial justice after Obama leaves office, for example, and I'm the only person I know so far who's talking about it, but I'm going to find some other people who are, and we're going to meet and talk about the future of that, future of racial justice post-Obama, and I'm going to keep writing on the beloved community. And that doesn't sound like a marketing strategy, but I feel like it's going to bring me out into the world more. I have a hard time just speaking about my practice, but I know that I'm my best advertising. So if I get myself out there and I model the qualities that I teach to others, I feel like that's going to actually be great marketing, and I trust that. My guides are always right. If I can listen to them and get out of my way, they're always right. And then I'm going to keep on, you know, the Facebook group is still pretty new. I'm going to keep on experimenting with different offers. Like, I have a telephone retreat for the Equinox, I often have telephone retreats. Look for more public speaking, look for more teaching. But yeah, and do more personal relationship building, bigger and bigger and bigger. I'm super personal with people. I do all my own scheduling. I schedule by email, or, you know, people can call me. I live in a little town. Someone's coming to drop off a check to me today, you know, at my front door. It's kind of cool. So, and people pay me by PayPal. So there's like a huge range, you know. It's interesting, global and local.
That's great. So any last bit of advice you would give a listener who's about to start a business, maybe having a little money blockage with the fact that they want to create a business and get paid for the unique ability? Any last bit of advice?
Get paid for the what?
For the unique, I call it the unique ability, what they're doing, what their gift, gift.
Yeah, I think the book Money Magic is an amazing book, and it is self-contained. You wouldn't need to do any money coaching. You could do self-money coaching. That's what I did initially. So I think that's an awesome book. There's a test in there you can take to see if you have sort of negative money archetypes that are doing the talking for you and running the show. It is really common in our culture that the closer you get to your unique ability, the more precious it is to you, and the less you want to sell it. And so getting real clear about what might get in the way of how you could market your unique ability. So I would say, look at the inner, look there and see what's going on. How can you still protect it like your baby, but still allow other people to enjoy it? Maybe that's more of a way to say it. And then also on the outer, removing any blocks to asking for what you want, being super clear about what you want and why you want it, so that you're in alignment in yourself and can be really strong and ask for it. and then know what you're going to do with it, and then do that with it. It's also real important to keep your word to the people who support you. Keeping your word is huge to me. To me, your word is your wand. Like, that's why magic happens, because I keep my word. Anyway, I think that would probably be my last bit of advice.
I love the word of your word is your wand. I've never heard that, and that should be on that's what you should put on your Facebook page. I like that.
It's not my phrase. I feel like I didn't make it up, but it is a wonderful phrase. It's true.
It's beautiful. So if my listeners wanted to reach you, where would they find you?
They would find my website, raisingclarity.com, and then my email address and my phone number, my landline, are at the top of every page. They would just reach out to me. Some people find the website, like, too much and confusing. I think it's really fun. I'm looking for a designer who can satisfy me to streamline it and simplify it. But everything's on there. The blog is on there. They can subscribe to the blog for free. There's tons of great tools on there. Like you, I want it to be useful to people, like the podcast series. So I give away the work there.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for your time. This has been wonderful and great, great information. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Kimberly. This is lovely.
You have been listening to The Mindful Marketing Show with me, your host, Kimberly Maska. You can get more information about this episode and all of my episodes at mindfulmarketingshow.com. There you will find all of the show notes and links to the books and business resources we discussed. Again, that's mindfulmarketingshow.com. Until next time, be passionate, be inspired, and live your dream. Have a beautiful day.